Red Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 50th Carlo Vivari International Film Festival, and I'm joined by the director of Sleeping Giant, Andrew Cividino. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Alright, would you like to start the interview by telling our listeners a little bit about the story of your film?
Yeah, Sleeping Giant is a coming-of-age film that follows three boys up in this remote community over the course of a summer. It's sort of like Stand By Me meets Lord of the Flies. Mm.
And what made you want to make this film? In other words, you're exploring themes of coming of age, like you said, in quite a particular way.
Yeah, I guess for me, I grew up spending my summers in this very specific place that's about 1,400 kilometers north of Toronto. And it's this beautiful landscape that is both like delightful to look at, but has this danger to it. And I really wanted to set a film there because I feel like it's just the appropriate tone for the kind of story I wanted to tell about these kids.
Do you make use of improvisation in this film by any chance?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, because it feels very real. Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, when I was working, I'd originally had this feature film ready to go, the script that was, you know, word for word, and the financing kind of fell through, and we ended up taking some scenes from that and going and shooting a short film in the summer of 2013. That short was called Sleeping Giant as well, and it ended up having a huge impact on how I wanted to approach the feature. I basically threw my script out and rebuilt it from the ground up as more of an outline, and really trusting my young actors to bring their own voices to it and guiding them through it. So when we went to set every day, I had sides written with, like, I had my dialogue written, but I didn't share it with them. I only shared with them the story beats of where their characters should be going. Yeah. And we would do these 20-minute takes, and they'd be awful. And we'd slowly workshop the scene and hone it down to be what it would need to be. And I would make sure that we didn't, you know, there's a tension between letting them bring their own voices and making sure that we serve the story, because it is a very specific arc and structure. And so we just kind of, like, basically played with that tension throughout the process.
Yeah, and also it's kind of difficult to, like, not overstep the boundaries of, like, overacting and stuff like that. So how did you cast them in first place?
I knew I didn't want to take some kids out of the city who were professional actors and bring them up and ask them to act like they belong in this totally kind of, like, rugged space. It made no sense to me. So I went out with my producer, Karen Harnish, for these extensive casting trips, and we went to every high school. We went to the mall and handed out flyers, every community center, everywhere we could think of that we would find. I mean, we went to skate parks and would try to, you know, hand out posters to kids who would crumple them up and throw them back at us, like, yeah, that. Just, like, anything to find these kids. And we ended up putting an online ad on Kijiji, which is sort of like Craigslist. Right. And that's our first lead that we cast was Nick Serena, who plays Nate. And he showed up without any sides, without booking an audition time. He said that he'd read about it on the internet and came in, and we interviewed before we did readings with them, and we knew right away that we had one of our kids. And yeah, That's kind of how we rolled out. We ended up casting his cousin from there, yeah, as the second lead. They're real life cousins, yeah. And so it's just...
Yeah, so do you think that helped the chemistry that they had?
Absolutely. I think there's a familiarity that you get out of that. That they have a history that, you know, isn't... there's not a lot of exposition in it, but there's a depth to it that I think that they just can bring naturally, with that tension of being the closeness and the friendship, but also the kind of friction of being family like that.
Well, let's go back to the setting of this film, because you do pay a lot of attention to the actual environment of the film and the nature, which actually I find kind of gives the story a little bit of a sinister touch sometimes. Yeah, it is beautiful, but every now and again, especially when they're up to no good, the kids, it's almost like, you know, it's very close to, any situation is very close to, like, becoming extremely dangerous. What does that kind of environment do in terms of setting the tone and atmosphere?
I think that there's a marriage between setting and tone in almost any film. And so for me with this, we've got this huge lake. It's the biggest great of the Great Lakes in North America. And and it's almost like an ocean, it feels like. And these remote islands that you can, you know, these kids can go out on their boat and play and jump cliffs and get up to whatever they want to. There's a freedom to it. But underneath that all, like, that's the same kind of lake that can whip up into a storm and, you know, in half an hour and strand you out there, which happened to us when we were shooting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or, you know, and same with the cliffs, everything about it, there is something kind of bubbling underneath, like a danger beneath the beauty to it. And I thought that was a tone that I wanted to really, really work with for the setting throughout the film, because, I mean, one, to foreshadow, but also because I think adolescent boys are the perfect example of us as humans, where like it's like that thin veneer of civilization has just been kind of stripped clean for them, and they're a bit more wild. But underneath in us all are these, there's this primal chaos. And I think that I wanted the setting to have that feeling as well, that underneath it there was just this teething chaos, and that's, yeah, that was that.
And I think you captured it very well, and also I think it's shot very well too. Would it be fair to say that it's an intuitive kind of cinematography that goes on? In other words, it's not planned, but it follows, again, the emotions and the feelings that are carried by the narrative and the action that is spontaneous in itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, because we did allow the actors to bring their own voices, it was important for us with the cinematography and with our production model to serve the performances and to allow those moments to happen. So we needed to shoot both on a camera and with a crew setup that allowed us to be really agile, because although you've got your story, there may be moments that just happen. When you're setting up some other shot, you have to be willing to completely abandon what you're doing, because now they're going and they're climbing this fence and they're doing this, you know, you didn't ask them to do it, but they're doing it, and it's really spontaneous. So we needed to be able to be spontaneous at the same time. But I didn't want that to get in the way of us being able to really tell a story visually. So balancing that with planning sequences that are very specific in how we shoot them, I think, and learning how to photograph that landscape appropriately, yeah, to get a sense of both the macro space and also the details, the micro of it, to give that whole texture. Once we figured out how to do those things and to be agile enough to keep up with our boys, I think that in and of itself defined our look.
Yeah. And did you take into consideration the actual perspective of the boys, in the sense that they perceive whatever is around them in a different way from the adults, who also apparently, you know, lead lives of their own, like second lives of their own, and they're up to no good too. But also, it's perspective and representation, because, you know, kids nowadays in movies are represented in kind of tired old commercial ways, especially in mainstream films.
In terms of how we represented the kids, there were more things that I knew I didn't want to do than did. I knew that I didn't want to just make a nostalgia piece about what it is to be that age and romanticize the freedom of being young. And I knew that I didn't want, I feel like with boys, there's this tendency to paint them with an overly simple brush. Like, you know, oh, they're wild and crazy, or, you know, or whatever it is. And there are actually, yes, I mean, that is true, but there are so many subtle complexities and, you know, vulnerabilities and shifting, you know, allegiances and everything that are happening. And I really wanted to make sure that we were able to capture the nuances of that, and to not shy away from the ugly side of being that age.
Sure, yeah. It's a lot of awakenings, a lot of emotions that are erupting all of a sudden, so it's a very difficult age.
It is, and I think that, you know, you're kind of figuring out where you fit into the world, and there are really only two kinds of, there are creative forces and destructive ones. And when you're kind of figuring out your place in the world, destructive forces are a lot easier to kind of harness and have an impact on the world around you.
Right.
So I think that's part of why, and I wanted to show that. I wanted to show that, you know, these boys going out and wreaking some havoc was a form of agency for them. That's where they're finding power.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually curious about that, because I'm reading a Pasolini book at the moment. It's first kind of about young boys that are behaving that way, and it's very honest about it. But also, it kind of reminds me of like Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, you know, those books where really they were far ahead of their time when they were written. So it's almost like literature has always been more comfortable with this type of representation of kids nowadays. I don't know if you have an opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I think, well, literature allows you a perspective of being inside, you know, somebody's mind in a way that it's not possible with film. Maybe that is why historically it's been done better, but I think that's also why it was important to me that we find a way to subjectively lens the film so that when we're with Adam, we can see the story through his eyes as much as possible and really hopefully feel what he's feeling when he's going through it.
Yeah. Another thing is, I don't want people to get the impression that this is just a drama, because I did have it's funny too. It's very funny too. And I laughed a few times, and really hearty laughs. And that's part of the fun of the spontaneousness as well. But I guess the final question is, another thing that I actually enjoyed in the film, apart from all of the things we talked about, because I do think it's a very good film, is also the music. And I was wondering whether you could spare a few words on the music that you used for the film.
Yeah. There's this band called Bruce Peninsula. They're a Toronto-based band that I was a fan of for years, and I actually, when I was writing the screenplay, I was listening to their music for inspiration, because it's got this huge percussive and kind of choral quality to it that I just thought was so evocative of the feeling I wanted for the film. And we cut a trailer for the short film and sent it out to some friends for feedback, and then they ended up bouncing it to one of the band members, thinking that we had permission to use the song, which we didn't. And so they got in touch with us and were like, why are you using our song? And so we ended up starting a conversation from there, and they actually really liked the short and what we'd cut together. And we just started a conversation and ended up collaborating with them on the score for the film. So it was this band in conjunction with Chris Thornborough, who's a composer who I've worked with. He's a classical composer. Over the course of a number of other projects, and this collaboration between the two of them, where Bruce Peninsula brings these, and it's all original music apart from like one licensed track in the movie. All of the sound of the film is definitely all written and recorded for the film. And Bruce Peninsula's got a new album coming out based on the music for the film, which will be cool.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's been entirely my pleasure, man. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.